This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Folks, if you've listened to the Herd Tell program, you've heard our friend Gabriella Hoffman, but you need to make sure you're checking out her podcast, District of Conservation. It's a podcast exploring the nuances of true conservation efforts from D.C. and beyond. From topic discussions to exclusive interviews with conservation and energy newsmakers, Gabriella keeps listeners appraised of the latest news stories while elevating important voices. Listen to District of Conservation on Apple Podcasts or wherever podcasts are played. Folks, you've heard of Ethan Brown on the Herd Tell show a couple of different times, but if you're interested in learning about how to discuss things like climate change without all the politics and doom and gloom, head over to his podcast, The Sweaty Penguin. Sweaty Penguin is a late-night comedy-style climate podcast working to add nuance, critical thinking, humor, and hope to the climate conversation. They got over 100 episodes already, breaking down weekly news stories and specific topics from the vanilla to the ADHD to the international accountability to orangutans. Yes, I know, it's a comedy thing, so just go with it. But each time, exploring different ways we can make progress on these issues while still helping the economy, health, security, and everything else we care about. Feel overwhelmed, exhausted, or excluded by today's climate change discourse? This is the podcast for you. Find The Sweaty Penguin wherever you get your podcasts or at www.thesweatypenguin.com.
With your host, Andrew Donaldson, this is Herd Tell.
Hi, welcome back to Herd Tell. Okay, one of my things is when a national media story goes into a small local place, the narratives get a little skewed. So what I want to do is I always say, get with the local guys. Well, Bernie Sanders went to West Virginia. He went to Wheeling, and one of our friends covers Wheeling, goes to all the city council meetings, actually knows what's going on in Wheeling. So let's have the anatomy of a Bernie Sanders rally in Red State, West Virginia. We're going to bring in Justice Hudson, our very good friend. He hadn't been working that much in his journalism job because of the flood recovery. We'll talk about that later. But, buddy, good to talk to you again. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Good to see you again.
Great to see you. You were there, Capitol Theater, home of the Jamboree. Free plug. Let's start there. For people that don't know, because you know Wheeling really well, you run the Wheeling Free Press, you're a local reporter covering Wheeling. When the big national story pops up, you did this with the floods a couple of weeks ago, you're doing it with Bernie Sanders now. Just start there with what's some of the things you start watching for when the national news story shows up in your local municipality that you actually cover as well? What's kind of the antenna goes up? What's the warning signs? What's the good signs when you start covering something like this?
It's a really great question. I had heard some rumblings for probably about a month or so that Bernie Sanders might be coming through Wheeling. So I had my eye ready for it, and I did get a little bit of a pre-notice that that was confirmed that he was coming here. Once it was released out to the media and it was reported out, you know, I wanted to see how people were reacting to it, and you see a lot of the same things that you would probably expect. Bernie Sanders coming to Wheeling, people saying that they're going to bus people in, that there's not going to be anybody in there, that why would he come here? You know, a lot of classic tropes of why would he come to a place like this? Shouldn't he be doing that or this, or look how rich he is? So, you know, honestly, just looking to how people react to that, it's a hyper-polarized world we live in. So obviously anytime somebody like Senator Sanders, who is an unabashed progressive, probably uses a plethora of terms to describe him, when someone like that, especially in a more conservative area, decides to come to the area, you're going to hear a lot of backlash. You're going to hear a lot of back and forth. And we saw that. But honestly, for a lot of that buildup, there was only really about 2 weeks of buildup. It was a pretty quick turnaround from Bernie Sanders announcing he was going to be in Wheeling and actually being here. So I think that helped in not being able to see a lot of the kind of nastiness build up through months and months and months. You had 2 weeks, but you know, our local news comment sections were really just a light with all different types of people kind of not only fighting against it, saying that he shouldn't be coming here, but then you obviously had people picking back and forth. It was a real pig pen kind of match there for a couple weeks while it was building up.
And let's start right there with that, because to quote my buddy Eric Garcia, the great congressional reporter, he's like, this tour is Bernie Sanders playing Freebird. This is classic rock, right? He's going to do the tour and everybody knows what points to clap at and what song to sing along to. I don't mean that as a derogatory term, but this is Bernie playing Freebird. This is the classic rock for the progressive folks, or everybody's going to show up and participate. What was the mix? Because that was the, like, I thought it was silly because I'm like, oh, of course Bernie can turn out. What's the Capitol Theater seat? 2,300, give or take?
It's over 2,000, yeah.
Yeah. This is a pretty big venue, very famous venue. Of course he can pack a building in West Virginia. That's silly. He won the primary there very handily. It's a small group compared to the rest of the state, but progressives are very active, especially the Bernie wing progressives, whatever you want to call them. They're very loud. They're very vocal. And I know there's at least a couple thousand of them running around. That didn't surprise me at all. But that was one of the narratives. Break it down for me, because you're from there. You cover these folks all the time. You cover the activist folks all the time. You know who they are. There was name liners on the stage. We know who some of them are. What was the split? Local people, regional people, state people. Again, Wheeling, for folks that don't know, this is the Ohio Valley. So Ohio's right there. Pennsylvania's right there. This is a tri-state area. So coming from out of state is a meaningless term for this area. Break it down for us. Who was local? Who was coming in? What was the crowd actually like?
Yeah, that's another great question. I was going up and down the line while people were waiting, doing interviews with people, trying to understand what they were interested in, what they were looking forward to hearing from Senator Sanders, and asking where they're from. When, you know, Wheeling is a little over an hour away from Pittsburgh, 2 hours away from Columbus. People can just travel on 70 and get here in no time. So I wanted to see how many people were local versus, and there was a really good mix of different people. I saw a lot of Wheeling people, obviously, a ton of people. For the whole 2 weeks, as this was kind of getting closer and closer, I was hearing people, you know, are you going to go to Bernie? Did you hear about Bernie? Are you going to go? So there was a lot of excitement here in the area. There were a decent amount of people from Pittsburgh. There were a decent amount of people from Washington County, Pennsylvania, Belmont County, Ohio. So you got Martins Ferry, you got Bel Air. You had people from Weirton up real north in the Panhandle, Steubenville. I talked to a man. He was from 3 hours west in a small town in Ohio, an older gentleman, but he was the union president for one of the coal mines in Moundsville. So that was pretty cool. And then you did have some downstate people. You had, I met a woman from Fayette County. And because she was from Fayette County, I let it slip that I'm actually not from Ohio County, that I'm from Kanawha County. So we could have a little bit of that communion there, being a South Central West Virginia kind of type. There were people from all over, and that was one of the detractions. There was that they're going to bus people in, that these people aren't even from West Virginia. Well, a lot of them were from West Virginia. But obviously, like, if you have a music concert in Pittsburgh, not everyone's from Pittsburgh that's going to that concert. It's not really to say anything negative about the event itself. People see something that they want to go to and they want to go there. And especially to have something like that in Wheeling, where, you know, Wheeling's on this decade-long fight to redefine itself and to have these names come back to Wheeling that used to come here. This is just like one step in that process. But there were people from all over. There were people, obviously, a lot of progressives, a lot of Democratic-leaning people. But there were Republicans, and I think they were a little shyer to maybe admit that they were Republicans, because they might have felt like they were in hostile territory. Whether that's true or not, I'd have to ask them. But I knew some people out in Triadelphia. I know we're going to talk about flood recovery later, but I was doing a story. I was doing some recording last Sunday, and half of the people that were at that center were Republicans, the other half weren't, and they were all going to go to Bernie. There was one guy, there's a real funny guy here in town who does kind of push back and forth and back and forth with the different sides of the political spectrum. And he kind of was poking fun at Bernie coming here and had some choice words to say about that. All respectful, but still, there you go. He was there. He had a picture in the crowd. He, you know, had originally said that there weren't going to be very many people there. And then, you know, about a day later, there was a picture from him posted to Facebook, kind of dead center there. So they packed the Capitol. The line, I mean, it was a huge line at first. Everyone lined up. All these different people, young, old, I mean, men, women, you know, kind of a whole spectrum of what the Ohio Valley and what this part of Appalachia really looks like. But they all, you know, once they opened the doors at 3:30, everyone filled in. I was a little nervous at first to see if they would fill the Capitol. But by the time it was about 5:30, right before the speakers, some of the great speakers that I think we'll talk about here in a second, the whole Capitol was full. And then by 6 o'clock, when the speakers really started, it was then standing room only. There were people just lining the back of the theater standing up. So people from all over place, people from all ages, children, all the way up to two really awesome women. I think they were in their 60s, who were the first people in line, and they brought chairs and everything there so they could sit out there as long as they had to. It was a pretty amazing thing to witness.
Now, before we get into the rest of it, I'm a media guy. I do it too. I'm guilty. Everybody got what they want here, because when Bernie Sanders comes to town, the people that support him get to support him, and the people who want the content creation of being against him, because he's an easy target. You know, he's an old school. He says socialism and doesn't flinch from it. That means you just get all kinds of social media engagement right off the top. Everybody got what they wanted here, because now you can rail against it. And West Virginia is a very red, very Trumpian state, and the media has evolved to match that. So there was a lot of pushback in the West Virginia media, especially on the right, especially with Republican GOP and Trump-friendly outlets. But look, that wasn't digging a ditch. They're having fun doing that. That's easy content for them. That's also part of the story here.
Definitely. I mean, one of the funny things was seeing like the state GOP put out a press release about Bernie Sanders coming to Wheeling, to West Virginia, because he also went to Lenoir down in Mingo County, and he went to Charleston as well on Saturday. And then you also had the House Republicans, the House of Delegate Republicans, put out a statement. And it was kind of funny because it just, in my opinion, it doesn't feel like something that's worth putting a statement out on or a press release out on. Like you said, they're having fun with it. There is this very unabashed, progressive, democratic socialist, 84-year-old man that's going to come to West Virginia and talk about all these things that, you know, the Republican Party of today is saying that these ideas are not conducive to the working class. And that, you know, that he's an elitist, that he's a millionaire with all these houses, and he's going to fly private here to the town. And, you know, in a way, it's very funny, because I think if the story of West Virginia is the story of very rich people with private jets running the place, and much richer than Senator Sanders, some of them not as rich, but you know, I don't think there's a single person representing us in Congress that has less than $1 million in the bank. And I don't know very many West Virginians that have even really $100,000 in the bank, much less $1 million. So it is one of those things where maybe in an ideal and less polarized and less raucous and just kind of oftentimes dirty political culture, this really could have been a moment to examine some of the policies that Senator Sanders has put out, you know, over the last couple decades of his career, especially since he ran in 2016, and talk about that and see, you know, what parts that different, you know, the Republicans might agree with, what parts they disagree with. Same with the Democratic Party. I mean, the Democratic Party, who Senator Sanders, you know, blew out the primary in 2016, won every single county in West Virginia. And was that in spite or despite or in favor with the State Democratic Party at that time? I'm not really sure. The State Democratic Party in 2016 was a whole different beast. Mind you, Jim Justice is running as the governor candidate, a self-ascribed billionaire who we now know has his own financial issues. So did they support Senator Sanders back then? I'm not too sure. But it was fun for everybody. I think it was a chance for everybody to hear what they wanted to hear. And for one side, what they wanted to hear was that some millionaire old man was coming on his private jet. And the other side wanted to hear issues that they sincerely, care about, which is Medicare for all, which is, raising the taxes for millionaires and billionaires and kind of some other family household issues. And everybody got what they wanted at the end of the day, but it took a little bit of back and forth to get there.
Here's my thing too, and this is kind of the unpopular take. That's all healthy. Yeah, there's the nut jobs on the internet who will, make it too personal. Look, Bernie can be an easy target on some stuff. Let's just be adults. The folks yelling at Bernie make themselves easy targets because they go way over the top on at the same time. Most folks are in the middle of the spectrum, and they understand that. There's the really loud, really ugly, nasty stuff online. But that kind of a push-pull is healthy. And I think that you need to have a healthy thing where, we're allowed to mock our political figures, especially people that have been in the Senate for decades. Yeah, you're allowed to make fun of them a little bit. You got to keep it in bounds. Everything you just said, though, is healthy, but it gets covered like it's all life or death existential stuff. No, it's all due respect to Senator Sanders, he's kind of a backbench senator at this point of his career. He's not leading his party. He's not going to be elevating to the presidency. He's out here doing his thing that he doesn't have to do. He's doing it because he likes it. Some of his followers like it. Other people don't like it. This is all good, healthy stuff. It would be nice if we could just treat it that way and not treat it like Bernie Sanders is coming, this is the end of the world, or Bernie Sanders is coming, West Virginia is going to flip blue in 6 months, because both of those are ridiculous.
They're both ridiculous. I mean, something that I heard from a handful of people was that that had never seen Senator Sanders speak. I saw Bernie in 2016 in Iowa as he was launching this campaign for the presidency. I've seen him speak before. I knew what to expect, but people who had never seen him before, and when he comes here to Wheeling to give this speech, they said it almost felt Trumpian, that it almost felt like a Trump rally, but for the other side, that there were the cues for the laughs, there were the cues for the claps, there were the cues for the boos. It felt to them like it was a bit staged, and that's okay. It is a healthy thing. It's a healthy thing to have people disagree. No one should be surprised that the state Republican Party is going to put out a release that says that, socialist Sanders coming to West Virginia. And they really upped their media game for this one. I think it gave them a chance to actually play with their styling. And there were some, pretty neat graphics that showed the plane, this private plane to Vermont, to West Virginia, whatever. It at least looked aesthetically a little bit different than what I'm used to seeing from either of the state parties, which are a little bit lost. It's not life or death, and that's how it gets treated sometimes, like you said. It really is not. But on the other hand, it was inspiring for people because, especially after the floods, but also just in general, people are feeling forgotten and they're feeling like no one's listening to them. No one's coming to speak to them. Congressman Moore, in 2 days from now, is going to have like a 1 hour, quote unquote, office hour at the Marion County Public Library. And that's great for him. But other than that, I can't really think of any chance that these elected officials are really coming out, especially during and after COVID, coming out to these. They don't even have to be town halls, but any just kind of moment where they're coming and speaking to people. If not speaking with, then speaking to them, that's something that I hear often, and especially after the floods, and it's going to keep coming back to the floods. I'm sorry, I'm stealing the thunder from the end of the interview, but, people, when I was out there doing reporting, they're like, where are my elected officials? Well, here's one of them, and we didn't elect him, but he's coming here to say these things. It's not a surprise to most people what he's going to say. And I think for some people in that crowd, even if they disagreed with him, they really just wanted to see somebody with some kind of power that they felt like they could do something was there. Now, like you said, Senator Sanders, he's not pushing that party. The Democratic Party doesn't know what way it wants to go. It doesn't really have a leader right now. It has leaders on paper. It doesn't really have spiritual leaders. And there was a moment when I think people thought that Bernie could be that spiritual leader. And for some people in that party, and even without it, but still supportive of those same politics, he is that spiritual leader. And so I think that's why he's able to draw a crowd that, you know, Ruben Gallego could probably not draw in the state of West Virginia. You know, God love him. But he comes to West Virginia, he can pull that crowd because there are people that want to see that move forward. But there's always going to be that fight back and forth. I mean, comparing to the Republican Party of today, the Democratic Party doesn't know what direction it wants to go in. So even though he's older and he's kind of getting past the moment of the spotlight, you know, I think the other day somebody asked him if he'd run for president, and he said, I'm turning 84 or 85 in a month. I think that answers your question. You know, this is kind of his, the free bird was really the free bird tours a great way. It's the sunset song. It's the last hoorah. You know, who knows if he runs again for the Senate. I honestly hope he doesn't, because if you're 84 years old and you've been there for decades, maybe it's time to spend some time with the family. But, you know, that's what it seems to me. It's his summer song coming through West Virginia and North Carolina this week. You know, months ago, he's over in Utah and he's in Idaho and he's in all these places you wouldn't expect him. In some places you would expect him. It's really that the free bird, the sunset, the final tour. That's what it seems like this way.
Yeah, and I think it's important to talk about it this way. And I'm not trying to put people on blast. I'm just saying, look, elections are scoreboards. You won the game or you didn't win the game. And the electoral scoreboard in West Virginia is Team Blue is not doing well. And we'll get into that, the history of that, in a minute. But one thing that keeps coming up over and over again is personalities really matter. And Bernie, whatever you want to say about his policies, I disagree with a lot of them. I agree with a few of them, but a lot of them I disagree with. He knows how to present it in a way that people that, even if they don't like him, will listen to him. Remember, the Trumpian right was all about him in the primaries when he ran for president. But it wasn't, you know, they thought he'd be easier to pick off. There was part of that. But he also talks in that populist styling. And I don't mean the policy, the way he presents it. He knows how to talk like a normal human being at a podium. And there's a big swath of our progressive friends, especially the very online and especially the activist class, and I'm sorry, this is just the truth, they don't know how to turn the snark down, and they don't know how to turn the vitriol down, and they don't know how to not make everything a nuclear war to extinction. And if they look at Bernie, I think they take the wrong lesson sometimes. It's like, they want to get into the nitpicking of the policy. Is like, no, you have to have the presentation first before people will hear you out on the policies. And a lot of them get it directly backwards. And I think that's something you're seeing on this tour and in places like, well, no, the reason West Virginia is where Bernie can go and pull this off is because people will actually sit and listen to him, because he's not a big bomb thrower. Sorry, online, right? He's just not. He doesn't make it super personal. He doesn't have a whole lot of attack lines. People want to listen to him, and I think that's something the progressive left, if they want to win wide election and not just little pockets, that's something they really need to work on, especially the very online left. Is that fair to say?
Oh, it's incredibly fair to say. I think, you know, as West Virginians, we know what it's like to feel like we're being talked down to, or that someone that's talking to us thinks they're better than us. And at the end of the day, Bernie Sanders does not sound like that. He sounds like your grandpa that's talking to you. And there's other people. I mean, I think that's one of the appeals of what, you know, people like Donald Trump, because they say he says what he feels, or he sounds like a normal person. You know, he's going up there, Bernie Sanders, when he's up on stage, you know, it doesn't sound like this cue card. There were no teleprompters. You know, there was probably something written out. I mean, he's done enough of these tours that, you know, he doesn't really need to have that cheat sheet of a teleprompter. But, you know, he's shaping that message to West Virginia. You know, he's talking about the history of the state. When he's downstate, he's talking about the mine wars, especially in Mingo County. That, you know, that got some excited cheers in Mingo County as well. You know, he's talking about labor jobs in Wheeling, which, you know, a hub of labor activity. You know, this is where Walter Reuther is born and raised and goes on to do great things. And he had a private meeting with a union hall before he went to this. So, you know, really able to shape that message to the crowd. People want to sit there. People want to listen. You know, the speakers that were before him were amazing and had that. And a lot of them had that similar ability, especially one of them, Amy Jo, who when she's speaking, it just sounds like your friend. It sounds like your mom. You know, you can see yourself in her as she's speaking. And I think that makes it a little more relatable. You know, I've seen people get up and speak, you know, if you do it in college, you do it, at, you know, whatever it is, they just sound, it can be robotic. It can be monotone and it can feel preachy. And I think at times when you're at a political rally, it still feels preachy. People want to listen to him and people support his policies. And I think especially when you go to places like some people from Pittsburgh, we had people from Morgantown. You know, like we had talked about earlier, there's enough progressives around the state of West Virginia, despite it being a very ruby red state of now. Even when it was Democratic, you know, it'd be hard pressed to call it a progressive state. But you've got these people in these places that will come out and fill a room for Bernie. It comes to a place that voted 60%+ for Donald Trump, but they also voted highly for him during the primary. You know, my own father supported Bernie Sanders in the primary. He lost and then flipped and voted for Donald Trump in the same election. And so there's a common sense. People have been talking about it for almost 10 years now about that. It's almost parallel. It's almost this similar track that Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders take. It is that populism track. It's a track that can lead in many different directions, depending on how you take it. But at the end of the day, the vast majority of people in America, when they hear someone speak about these policies, they don't want some wonk from Harvard University, which unfortunately there is a point where you can have too much school. You've gone to school for too long and too high that you forget how to talk to people that are not around you. They want somebody that sounds like them. And I think that's a fair thing to want from the people that are supposed to represent you in the halls of Congress or anywhere else.
I think you said something really important. West Virginia is a deep red state right now, but in my lifetime, when I registered to vote for the first time in 1998, it was deep blue. They didn't ask you what party. They just assumed you were going to be a Democrat when you registered to vote. That's true. Like, it was exactly flipped from what it was. There was hardly any Republicans in national and statewide office for West Virginia. I've seen it just in my lifetime, but one of the reasons it flipped so hard so fast was it was almost exclusively over cultural issues, not policy issues, almost exclusively. There was a few, but it was almost all culture stuff because those Blue Dog Democrats were socially conservative, even though they were, you know, they want their government programs and benefits and yada, yada, yada. But they weren't ready for where the party went culturally. So that's one of the reasons it flipped really quick. And the other reason it flipped really quick was you had just rock solid one party rule and people just get drowned out on that. Well, now the Republican Party, it's rock solid one party rule. We have, I think we're down to what, 8 Democrats in the legislature and Senate combined, something like that. This is the same environment again of the Republican Party, especially the Trumpian, the more Trumpian. And there's folks that, you know, toe the line with Trump but aren't Trumpian. So I don't want to paint too broad a brush here. There's good people in the Republican Party in office. But the direction of the Republican Party is very much our way or the highway. It's a lot of what I heard from the Democratic Party when I was a teenager growing up. It's the other side of the spectrum, but it's the exact same stuff. Oh, we don't have to worry about that. Well, they didn't have to worry about it until Al Gore lost and then Capito won. And then, you know, it snowballed and now there's nobody. It's all red. It'll take a long time. But West Virginia is not a naturally plus 42 for Trump state. That's too high. It's going to come back. And I think part of the reason it's going to come back is when you have just one party in an echo chamber, and that's what happens. They forget how to talk to people, and it opens up the door for the other. The challenge for Team Blue is you can't be in your own bubble and forget how to talk to the people so that the door's open for them to come back. And I think that's where we're at right now, where I don't know that they know how to let those Trump people come back when they want to come back on Midterm. I know the independent numbers, there's that debate going on, that not letting independent vote thing is going to blow up on the GOP. There's going to be a backlash to that. People don't like that. What do you see it coming, though? Because I think that's one of those undercurrents that 10, 15, 20 years from now, you're going to look back and it's not going to be blue again, but maybe it's plus 15 instead of plus 40, or it's plus 12. It's doable. I think that's the little cracks of where it starts, is you forget how to talk to the other side. And then you can't get those swing voters anymore because you don't know how to talk to them.
It's a huge problem, Andrew. It really is. And, I'll use a story personally. You know, I don't like to really share my, I don't like to put a label on my politics. I'm not afraid to share my beliefs online. But I don't say I'm this or that or whatever, but I'm a registered independent, and I would describe myself as more of a progressive person. I think the type of person I am, and some of the identities that imbue with me, have led me to be a progressive person. And I'm in this very conservative state. Even when it's a Democratic state, it was very conservative. When I moved to Wheeling, I worked on a farm, and I worked, and agriculture is a very conservative area, line of work, especially during these Trump years. When I was a farmer, I was going to people's houses that had Trump flags flying proudly, three or four of them. They had their signs out. And there's this undercurrent of not only not knowing how to talk to people, but this like online, like vitriolic, loud, you know, speaker. So when I'm online and I'm seeing what I'm assuming is the Republican line that is being towed at that time, or the MAGA line that's being towed, you know, there's some really nasty stuff in there. There's some stuff that, you know, I've been called a child predator multiple times just because I happen to like other men. And so for some reason, in some circles, that gets kind of spiraled into this predatory, you know, it's gross what people will call you. And so when I'm going to these farms and they have their Trump flag, there was a part of me that was a little nervous. They've got their kids, and, you know, I've got tattoos up and down, and you know, I don't look like a normal farmer. Are they going to treat me any differently? And at the end of the day, you show up and you say, you know, what's the job you have done to get done? I'm here to help you with that job. We do the job. And then, you know, I've got these people who would vote for Trump in 2028 if they could, inviting me in their house and introducing me to their kids. And I'm watching their kids. The kids are coming to the farm to play, you know, while I'm working, or I'm watching their house while they're on vacation. We're having dinners together. We're having conversations together. And I ideologically, politically, we're very separate. You know, we're two sides of a canyon. But you can meet in the middle and you can have that conversation, and there's beauty and being able to speak to people who otherwise on certain issues would just disagree with you till they were blue in the face. I shared that story on Twitter one time, and the comments that I got were so nasty, mostly from people who were on the left, who were like, you're being taken advantage of, you're excusing bad behaviors on the other side. And I'm just sitting here like, whoa, whoa, whoa. These are our neighbors, and these are my friends. And this is a state that hands down over 60% of people voted for Donald Trump. The numbers are there. And so if you can't have a conversation with these people that share this land with you, then I don't know where we can possibly go from here. And most of the time too, with issues that you disagree on with someone, if you come at it in a certain way, you can get to a middle ground pretty easily on a lot of stuff. You know, I even got two of my friends who were in their 70s to come to a point, not that they understood non-binary, they, them pronouns, but they at least could respect it when it came to something personal. You can really meet in the middle in a lot of places. people are struggling to talk to other people, mostly because politics has become this very scary thing. I mean, I can't be too upset with certain groups of our population, especially like transgender West Virginians, who feel very, very attacked right now because you've got a super majority in the legislature and you've got a super majority in Washington that do seem hell-bent on making sure that their life is as miserable as possible. And so it's, I can understand how it's hard for certain groups to take that step and that leap of faith and have these hard conversations with people. But for the majority of us, there is no reason why we should be writing off entire segments of our family, of our friends, just because of how they voted. Because at the end of the day, no president's perfect. At the end of the day, a party is perfect. And right now we're seeing a Republican supermajority that won with pretty broad appeal. It was still a nail biter in some aspects, but you know, the Republicans are in control and they're not doing it perfectly. The president is doing or saying certain things that have other reactions than I think he would probably like. And many people who supported him will be honest about that. And I think that honesty is really beautiful. And I think if the Democratic Party of West Virginia wants to get to a point where it can win elections again, we have 11 Democrats in the state legislature, which is not much more than 8. But
my bad, sorry.
No, that's okay. 11 of them. If they want to get more than that, then there's going to have to be, you know, some type of reconciliation, some type of remaking of the party. You're not going to agree on all issues, but can there be a common theme that they can agree on that can push them forward? I'm not sure. It seems the cutthroat atmosphere has worked for Republicans so far. Maybe it doesn't work for much longer, and we see I don't know, is it big tent or is it my way or the highway? Which one's going to work better for a party? I'm not really sure. They've each tried different methods. Right now, it seems my way or the highway is working for Republicans. But like you said, it worked for the Democrats before, and we'll see how long it lasts. That's basically it. The people have got to learn to talk to each other again, or at least get to a point where we can have these civil, cordial conversations with people who, quite frankly, just disagree with you on everything. And that's okay.
Is the progressive side, because they're dominating the team blue right now, because, and I get it. Look, there's nothing else. How do you get national money and national attention? You go more to the left, you get into that, you tap into that fundraising. I understand it. If I'm a political strategist, I completely understand why this is happening. But the Democratic Party in West Virginia, it is unarguable, has gone more and more to the left the more the Republican Party has taken over. That's just a fact. I was ready to look at this rally and watch it, and especially with some of the speakers, because I'm familiar with all of them. I've interviewed a few of them. I know a couple of them.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers, all so that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I was ready to kind of pounce on this thing because, you know, the people, and I had the kind of the preconceived notion of, you know, the people that ran Paula Jean and got blasted by 40 back-to-back elections, they're clueless. They don't, you know, you can't just take the national narrative and show up and whatever. There was a little bit of that from the podium, but it wasn't as much as I thought it was going to be. I thought Brian Butcher talked, which he, you know, Brian follows me on Twitter. I don't know why, but hi, Brian. How you doing? He got up. Housing's his jam. So he talks about housing, right? Brian Butcher, city councilman from Morgantown in West Virginia. He gets up and talks about housing. That's an issue with more universal appeal. Shrewsbury gets up. You talked about Amy getting up. She really started with, and I'm just going to paraphrase and summarize. You can tell me how it came off to you. She started with the flood stuff and went, we're politically active because of this flood stuff. We're neighbors helping you. It took her a good 5 minutes before she mentioned anything politically. Is that a fair way to lay it out?
Yeah.
I'm seeing little signs of, I think they're starting to get it. So even at a Sanders rally, which is the bluest of the blue, the most progressive. You could probably say about anything you wanted from that stage and get an applause line from it. Even in that environment, even Zach Shrewsbury, I think there's a little bit of awareness of everybody's watching us. We can say what we want, but let's still keep this to personal stories. I was a little wrong in my preconceived notion. I think they did a better job of that than I thought they would do. Danielle Walker spoke on the podcast. She's a dynamic speaker. I've interviewed her on this program. Go back and watch it. Is that a fair way to lay out what happened there? Because I think I was a little wrong coming in. I think maybe they have learned a little bit. It wasn't as rah-rah as I thought it was going to be. I thought they kind of kept it between the guardrails, and that's from somebody who's, you know, that Bernie Sanders rallies are definitely not my thing. What was your opinion?
I think you're spot on. I had my concerns about some of the speakers when it was first announced. And I did. I had this weird backdoor look into the planning of this. I did not help, you know, any of the creation of this, but I was in the groups that were chatting about this. So I got to hear the speakers a couple of days before anyone else heard about it. And I had my concerns. I knew that there were going to be Republicans in that crowd. And I was afraid that if you had hyper partisan political speakers, not that I think any of them are that, but that it's easy to let a speech in that environment, like you said, get to that. I was afraid that that would immediately turn those people off. And especially as you're coming to the state like this, you want people that are on the other side for you to come and listen and hopefully take something away from that positively. But the speakers, you know, Brian Butcher was a bit of a surprise to me. I didn't know that he was actually in the running.
Yeah, me too.
Excuse me. Until they announced it. I've been following Brian for a while. And I was down in Morgantown. I've been down there a couple times doing stories. You know, I got to meet Brian for the first time in person that day. But that was my first time ever hearing him speak. That wasn't on council. The last time I saw him speak on council was about a year ago when the city of Morgantown was dealing with their homelessness issue when they were trying to go through this camping ban. You know, I think people reacted to him incredibly well, especially for a guy who is a city councilor in Morgantown. He just recently got elected by his peers, the vice mayor of Morgantown. Not many people, I think, know his name outside of these, you know, activist circles. And so I think that was great. Danielle Walker, you know, I've known Danielle for years. I met her back in, I think it was 2016, a couple years after she had just gotten elected. So to see her up there again, and you know, it was an electric thing when she's up there speaking. I mean, people were on their feet and they were cheering and they're clapping and, you know, but it felt organic. It didn't feel like something that was staged or anything. Zach Shrewsbury, you know, he ran last election cycle for Senate. I think people got to know his name a little bit, but this area heavily supported his opponent, Glenn Elliott, because he was our mayor. And I think people knew him a little bit more. But again, he goes to talk about labor issues and it's really resonating with the crowd. But I have to say, and if any of those three other speakers are speaking, or listening to this, I, you know, don't take any offense to that. I hope I've, you know, lauded your praises enough, because it was a nice balance of the political, but also the very personal. And like, this is what I'm dealing with. This is what I see in my line of work. But at the end of the day, I mean, Amy Jo, I think, just really stole the show, and I say that because she had what she was speaking about is still raw in my mind, and raw in hers, and raw in many, many people that are in this area, which are those devastating floods that hit Ohio County on June 14th. 9 people are dead. One of Amy Jo's big, you know, things that she says right now, or she'll remind people of, she does hashtag 38 days. It took 38 days from June 14th before we got our federal disaster declaration in the area and unlocked this FEMA funding. And there's still so many questions about how that funding is even going to be used or spent, or, you know, but Amy Jo is her job is activism. She is in this line of work. She did some work down in the Capitol for years. She got, you know, kind of rose to fame 5 or so years ago when she's speaking and before Congress. and gets kind of a viral moment where she's, you know, speaking to them, and it just gets shared around. So in some ways, a very political person. But I talked to Amy Jo back, like I said, last Sunday when I was in Philadelphia. I was actually interviewing her. I'm excited to get that piece out. It's been a whirlwind of a week, though, so we'll get there sooner than later, hopefully. But one of the things that she told me and that we'll hear her say is that she used to be a very partisan political person, and then the floods happened. And it was communities, the community came together and they helped each other. They got themselves fed. They coordinated people to come clean out their basements. They're still cleaning out people's basements. You know, they're still finding people who nobody has even been to yet. And it's now, we're nearing almost 2 months since the floods happened, and there are still houses that nobody has knocked on their door to see if they're okay. So I think because of that experience, because of the experience of her working at this relief center at the Tri-Delphi United Methodist Church, where a lot of those people are Republicans, a lot of them are card-carrying MAGA, if that was a thing, you know, big supporters. But when this happened, and it took 38 days to get the declaration, and they're not seeing Senator Justice or Senator Capito, they're not seeing Congressman Moore, they're not seeing the, you know, the governor has been here, and I will give him that. He's been here often and regularly. He was here on June 15th giving a press conference, but he's not in the crowd, from what I've heard. He's not having lunch with these people and asking them, what do you need? How are you feeling? He's having roundtables with county officials, and he's having roundtables with, you know, United Way, and, you know, but he's not sitting there talking to the people who for the last 6 hours were with a shovel shoveling their basement. So it's all to say is I think that experience really for her and for a lot of people in this area put a lot of things into perspective. So when she got up there, I mean, that speech, she spoke for, oh, like 8 minutes or more. And I think they were each given 3 minutes. And the fact that nobody very politely came on stage and said, all right, Amy Jo, like, give it up for Amy Jo, I think says a lot about that moment when what she was saying was so relevant locally, but has that ability to speak to a broader crowd nationally who is watching too. So I think the speakers did great. I think that was maybe a little bit longer of a synopsis than maybe you signed up for, but they were great. And I think they played that line of getting their political cheers and their boos. There was once, I can't remember exactly which speaker, but there was it was a very choreographed boo when certain things were said. I think it might've been Brian. But for the most part, there was this amazing way of just, this is what I'm doing in my line of work. And this is why I think it's important. And I think it really resonated with people.
And because you cover city council and you've gotten a little bit of national run because things like the homeless issue will pop up on the national news, things like that. This is the question I always want to ask a local reporter at a national zoo is like, okay, everybody shows up for the Bernie rally that's on Team Blue, especially the progressive let's be clear, the progressive online left has its own ecosystem separate from the Democratic Party. And that's who shows up to these things is that's not even derogatory. That's just how it works, right? They have their own online community. That's how you can fill the theater up. But you know this because you go to the council meetings, you cover the elections, you cover the by-elections, you covered all the hot mess of all that. If you don't have functional local parties at the city and county level, you can have all the rallies packing a theater you want, and it ain't going to make a dime's worth of difference come November time, whether it's a midterm election, a national election, a general election, dog catcher, referendum, levy, whatever. That's the disconnect. What do you see going forward? You were behind the scenes on the planning. Again, the planning of this thing came together very, very quickly. Is there going to be any follow-up? Is there any like, okay, how's the, pick your county. I don't want to pick on anybody because I didn't look it up, but like, you know, the Ohio County Democratic Party or the Wurzel County Democratic Party, or how are you going to go down to Calhoun County or Braxton County or Pocahontas County? How are you going to go into these places where, you know, 20 some delegate seats didn't even get contended on the Democratic side and start fixing these local parties to start being competitive? That's the disconnect. You cover local politics. Talk to your national brethren a little bit and be like, hey, we're over here. We need to bridge this gap, because that's how you're going to actually do something different.
Yeah. I mean, what changes? I don't know. I think that the people that were on the ground planning this Bernie rally are young and they are excitable and they come from many different backgrounds. One of the people that was helping out was communications director for the Andrew Yang campaign when he ran for governor. So there's people with broad experience. There were people that were helping with the Elizabeth Warren campaign. They're young, they're excited. They are buying property in Wheeling. They are getting this taste of the idea that they can, you know, shape a city in a way that they'd like to. On the other end, and I love these people, they're good friends of mine. On the other side of that coin, you know, because I'm covering politics and I'm covering council, and when I'm writing about that, I really try to keep my own personal opinions out of it. It doesn't need to be in there. But when I'm talking about those same issues to my friend group, I'm obviously telling them what I think and what I believe. And there have been several times where I've said, we need people to be at the city council meeting at this time and on this day, and we need people signed up to speak, and we need people to, like, the people that are in office need to understand what other people think, and they don't show up. And maybe that changes. Maybe this is exciting, and they've gotten this taste of what it's like to have that national spotlight, and they take it seriously. Sometimes it's better and sometimes it's worse when it comes to attendance. On the side of the Democratic Party, what I want to share is just a brief story of the No Kings rally, which was also June 14th. A lot of things happened on June 14th in Ohio County. One of those was the No Kings rally. I did not have any part in planning that. I did not go to it. We had our Pride Festival. I'm on the board of our local LGBTQ organization. So we had our Pride Festival that day. Was very excited about that. But I was hearing from some of the people that were planning this No Kings protest. And there are, in Ohio County, it's like 43,000 people. The city of Wheeling is like 27,000 people. It's really not that many people that live here. But, you know, these protests were organized by quote unquote indivisible groups. It's like national organization. And there was one organization that was planning a rally. And from what I've been told, and maybe this was supposed to be off record, but, you know, one of my things, I love sharing things that maybe I shouldn't, but, you know, the Democratic Party allegedly got upset with that and the indivisible group created their own group. And now there's two separate No Kings protests on the same day in a city of 27,000. And I think that that is indicative of a problem when it comes to the Democratic establishment right now, which is you've got in this party a lot of old guard people who remember a state that they grew up in, which was all run by Democrats. And because they've lost, they think they lost because of Donald Trump. They think they lost because of a number of reasons that I don't know if any of them are really true. But they think that if they do the things that they've done for the last 30 years in these positions as county leads, as you know, higher ups in the state party itself, if they just do the things that they've been doing, at some point the state will turn back to them. And yes, they are leaning a little bit more left and more left and more left. But, you know, last election cycle, the party was very, they're not, the county parties are not supposed to endorse in primaries, but the Ohio County Democratic Party did not endorse anyone, but it was who they were sharing information from. They're sharing maybe 10 posts from this one candidate, and then in between that, they'll share one from the other one. So they're trying to pick this. They're trying to curry their favor, and it's not working. I've heard from people, it's turning people off. All of that to say, if I was to speak to the national people, we got to get people to the council meetings. We have to have people to take their local government seriously And they have to pick these topics that they want to advocate for or against. If there's an ordinance that's coming up that you don't agree with, or there's something you want to see done, you get these people in those seats speaking on those issues. And when they see success, which is sometimes hard fought and long time from the start to the end, but when you see that success, you can see within yourself the potential to do that on a larger scale. And then people start getting tuned back into the political system. That's not happening right now. A lot of people are checked out. I think voter turnout was one of the highest it was back in 2024. It was one of the highest it had been in years, but it was still 34 to 40%, something like this. So it's still not an amazing turnout. The Bernie Sanders rally is great. People come, people listen to him. Are they going to show up to the polls in, you know, about 6 months or 7 months when we have our primary? I don't know. I'm not sure. Are they going to show up to the city council meeting tomorrow that we're about to have? I don't know. I don't think so. It's really hard to say, how do you turn this movement from something that's national and that's something that is excitable and live streamed to all these people to something that really is impactful? I think one way to get that started is pick an issue, go to your council, go to your county commission, fight for that issue, watch it pass the finish line. And that gives you that taste of what can be. This is some of my suggestions that I would offer. Does it change things? I don't think it does change anything. I think what's going to change it ideally are these younger generations of people that are coming through this party. Well, that reminds me, it's one thing I wanted to mention is that the new leader of the state Republican Party is younger than me, and I'm 28 years old. And so you've got this new blood that's coming into the political mainstream. And I think that's got to happen on both sides for either party to have a chance in the future. You got to get young people involved. It's a lot easier said than done, though.
I think you just low-key called me old, but okay, we'll let that slide. You just hit on something really important there, though, is everybody wants that viral moment. But what really moves things is if you can go get, you know, people don't want to do the small wins anymore. They don't want to do the ballot initiatives. They don't want to do the local ordinance. They don't want to do the local. I know petitions are kind of old school, but you still do them online. Look, that's just data information, same concept, right? People don't want to do the small wins, and the small wins stack up to big wins. Everybody wants to skip that. They want to do the viral moment. They want to get the national money. Let's all be adults here. You get the national fundraising, the national money, and the big attention, and then nothing changes. But plenty of people, it's like an NFL team. Lots of people say they're serious about winning, but the same couple of teams win every year. Why? Well, because it wasn't really about winning. It was about I'm in charge of it, or we're making a lot of money, or whatever. Same thing with politics. The people that are serious about winning usually do some winning at some point because they were serious about it. And the people that just enjoy the game of being involved in politics stay involved in the game and don't do a whole lot of winning. At some point, the scoreboard actually matters, and we should just start judging people accordingly, yeah?
Oh, 100%. I mean, take a small thing in Wheeling, which was an ordinance that was proposed that would have banned the feeding of feral cats. Maybe one of the smallest issues you could possibly pick to fight against. And people came to that city council meeting in droves. As many people, if not more people, signed up to speak for that issue than they did the urban camping ban, which very much would hurt people more than feeding cats. But people signed up and they voiced their concerns. People are animal lovers. This is things that on any side of the aisle that you are politically, you can, I like animals. Not everyone says, let's go feed the cats that are outside. Neither here nor there. People like animals. So when there's this idea that we're going to starve the animals to death, they're going to die, these poor, I mean, people just lost their minds. I mean, they were on Facebook. They're, you know, some people got nasty as all debates do, but you know, people went online, they voiced their opinions, they showed up to council, they packed the chambers. And what did the council do? They tabled the motion for that ordinance. It was like the first reading. It wasn't even going to pass that night. They tabled the ordinance. The guy who apparently is the one that was kind of the lead sponsor for this, the one that suggested the idea, apologized and said he didn't know all of the things. And, you know, one of the crux of the argument was that it was going to impacts people's private property rights, that if I'm on my private property, I can do what I want and I can feed a million stray cats if I want to. And people spoke and they took the ordinance off. It was an easy win. What I would like to see that easy win turn into is then people say, wow, all I had to do was share my opinion and people listened to me and it made them act a certain way. I want more crosswalks on my neighborhood street. I'm going to go and talk about the crosswalks. I'm going to go talk about flowers. And then all of a sudden, you're talking about little issues like cats and crosswalks and cute little flowers. And then the next month, you're talking about beautification. There are dilapidated houses all around me. We need to, the people that own them, we've got to do something about these people who are sitting on these properties. They're falling down and they won't sell them. They won't fix them up. We've got to do something about that. Now we've got to, and it just will snowball into this bigger and bigger thing. People can start to realize that they actually have power on these local levels. And especially in a city of Wheeling, if enough people, I think it's like 15% of the electric, find out if you're going to council all the time and you're saying more crosswalks, more flowers, and they're like, no, 15% of the people sign a petition, all of a sudden you've recalled that elected official and we try again. There's immense amount of power on the local level that nobody sees, that I do see because I've had to read the city code so many times to understand how this body works, because they won't tell you how it works. They love that not many people show up. And I'm not speaking about them personally. I'm speaking of them as an institution. The council loves that nobody shows up. And I think the council loves that nobody gives them a hard time, that nobody has ever really used the petitions for redress, which are these, you know, basically like a petition.org, but would actually, or change.org, but that would actually have some kind of meaningful reaction, because most of the petitions online are really just to make yourself feel good about signing something. You know, that if we could get that small change, if we could get people to understand that on day one, you're arguing for or against feeding feral cats. And then day like 1000, you're getting a beautiful, nice renovated homes in your neighborhood, and you're changing parking minimums so that new developers can come in, and you're making sure your streets are safe. You're getting speed bumps in that one street that everyone just flies through and you're afraid to have your kids out. You're creating that momentum from day one to 1000. You got to start with the small. People don't want the small steps, because I can get on my phone and nowadays go to some AI generator and type in whatever question I have about the world and get probably a wrong answer, but one that people will still believe. And that feels like that instant gratification. I think part of my job as this independent reporter is to remind people that the small wins really matter. The instant gratification feels good, but sometimes what feels even better is turning around at day 1000 and seeing all of the work that you've done before. If we can get that through people's heads, I think we'll have a pretty successful local democracy, and that would feed upward. There's no trickle down, but it would trickle up into the national spotlight.
Yeah. One thing before I let you go, and we got long on this stuff, but this is great conversation. I want to talk about the flooding recovery just a little bit, because I know from experience, this is the time period when people actually really need help. And I know we already talked about the FEMA stuff being late and get there, and that's all one issue of it, though. If you've never done flood recovering, folks, you need to go do flood recovering so you have a frame of reference, because until you muck out a house and you don't understand that there's just layers of filth and mud, and you manually have to pull it out of carpets and linoleum and walls and drywall, if you've never done it, you need to go do it so you understand what's going on. Any house that floodwater touches has to be rewired electrically and signed off on zoning codes. This is a city, especially places like Tridelphia. They've got infrastructure issues because it rips out all the water lines. Walk through, because you basically stopped reporting and you went and picked up a shovel and got busy on this stuff. So tell people what it's like, because now after that, people are extremely generous. You get that big surge of help right off the bat. Right now is actually the really hard part, because people have to make housing decisions. Some of that initial funding's kind of gone. The media coverage has gone away. Refocus on what flood recovery is like now that the funerals are done and the really, really hard work starts.
Yeah, Andrew, it was, this is the first time I ever experienced a flood like this. And it was emotionally intense. I have a separate job that's not journalism. Journalism is not paying my bills yet. When it gets to that point, we'll be so happy to get to that point. That first week, there were, I think I worked 2 days, and I looked at my boss, I look at my coworkers, I say, I can't be here. It doesn't feel right being here. We had people that could fill in for me. And so I said, if we have people that can fill in for me, then I got to go do this thing. And I went out there and, you know, I did a little bit of help cleaning the houses, and you learn a lot. That mud is incredibly heavy. That how do you get mud out of a basement? That I mean, the basement steps are just like my basement steps, because this is the first time I've lived in a house that was built before the 1900s. The tiny little narrow walkway into the basement, steep stairs, you know, a low door. So you've got to bend over and you're carrying 50, 60, 70 pound buckets and a totes full of wet, sloshy, nasty mud with debris in it. I mean, it's insane. Inches, some places feet of mud. And this is after the water's gone out. And the people that, one of the hardest things about doing flood recovery, so I did some shoveling, and then I also did a lot of the coordinating. The team that I was working with, Ohio Valley Mutual Aid, they had people there since the day after the flood. That core team was getting exhausted. They needed someone that was capable of taking over. I was that person. My focus was never to do a story on anybody, because I thought, this is no time to put a microphone in someone's face. So like you said, I put the microphone down, the computer down, and I went out there from sunup to sundown. A couple days doing the cleanup, mostly also though helping do the coordination. And one of the hardest things that I learned, and maybe this is a West Virginian thing, maybe it's an everybody thing, nobody thinks that they have it as bad as they do. Nobody thinks that their situation is the worst case scenario. You had a lot of people that would not want to take things because they thought they were taking from somebody else. You had I would call somebody and I would say, you're on our list for a volunteer group. And they're like, we don't need any volunteers. I think there's other people that would need it. And then I would ask them, I'd say, well, talk to me about what your house looks like right now. Oh, we just have a couple of inches of mud in the basement and it's really not a big deal. And you're having to have, you become a little bit of a social worker where you're having to convince people. In many cases, double my age. Triadelphia is an older town. It is where a lot of people are retired, and there are these homes that have been in their names for, you know, generations too. You're having to tell people that it doesn't matter if somebody has it worse than you. Your situation is not good. Let us get somebody out there to help you. Like I said earlier, though, there are still people now that nobody's knocked on their door. I heard stories of people saying that they felt abandoned because nobody was coming to them. Nobody, I mean, it's even simple stuff now. They've got the money, and nobody's telling them how to do it, how to fill out these forms and how to, you know, get the help that they need. The first couple weeks, there was a huge push of volunteers. We almost had too many volunteers. It became hectic. It was chaotic. It was, you know, beautiful too at the same time. It's hot and it's sweaty and I'm getting sunburnt. And one of the things, I'll be a little, I was drinking so much water, but I'm standing in the sun. And for a week, I just did not pee during the day because my body was just recycling this water so fast. It's a weird thing to say, but man, everybody that was there volunteering with us felt the same way. They just could not pee. It's a weird thing to learn. And then week three came and we were getting three groups of volunteers, and you've got a list of people that need help, and it starts to break your heart. And then a couple of days later, you've got one group of volunteers that's going out. And so now, instead of measuring success on the amount of houses, you're measuring success on what you're actually able to finish. And now you're at a point where there are people that are still every single day. I've had to go back to work now. At some point, the bills do have to be paid. And so now I've got to go back to work. There are people that have the ability to still be out there volunteering, and every day I see them say, is anybody willing to come help me? Can anybody come out and help me? People still have mud in their houses. We learned about a lot of hoarding situations. People have a lot of stuff in their houses that's completely ruined that needs to get out of that house. People still have mold People still have drywall that's not, you know, needs to be torn out and replaced. And FEMA's not going to make them whole. My friend just got her FEMA check. It was something like $20,000-$30,000, which is an amazing amount of money. But if they just were solely relying on FEMA, that would not get them anywhere near whole. You're talking about rewiring houses, and that's so real. Most people's HVAC systems are in their basement. So when that floods, the HVAC system is ruined. The water for a lot of people went to their basement and up into their first floor, in some cases, several feet into the first floor. So now you're also having to change out that ductwork that's in there. And that you get to tens of thousands of dollars doing something like that. People are struggling still, but there are some successes. When I was down in Tri-Delphia on last Sunday, we had people that were, they were coming down. I wasn't volunteering. I was there to do a story, but you had people coming to the center asking for grass seed. I mean, that's a real mark that we've gotten to a point now where people's needs are met, and now they want grass seed to reseed their lawn that just had a raging river flow through it a month ago. It's completely bare. And I think that's beautiful. And the last thing I'll say on the flood recovery is I asked Amy Jo, I said, there's going to be a new normal here, because Amy Jo has been out at Tri-Delphia United Methodist Church every day. And I said, so there's going to be a new normal. It's not going to look the same. But I'm curious, at what point do you get to a point where you can look back and say, we've entered that new normal. We're no longer in crisis mode. And Amy Jo had experience down in 2016 as well, doing flood recovery with those people. And it was about the same time when the floods hit, was in the summertime. And she said, when we get to Thanksgiving, I think that's going to be a good time for us to look back and see where we're at. And to think about that, I mean, we are just now in the middle of August. Thanksgiving is months away. That's when she herself thinks that we're going to be able to turn around and see this new normal. So it's been painful to see the media turn its eye away from this story. It's been painful to see elected officials not come here, not meet the people. I don't know where Senator Justice Capito or Congressman Moore have been this whole time. I would love to have seen them come here. The governor has been here several times, me a half dozen times or more. Would love to see him sit down and eat lunch with some of these people that were out there volunteering, or, you know, go door to door and just ask people what they're doing, how they're doing, what they need. But at least he was here. I think that meant a lot of people to have him here. Hopefully some of these people will come here before it's too late, because a lot of these people out here, they feel abandoned. It took 38 days to get the federal declaration. Meanwhile, places like Rio Decio, New Mexico, got their declaration on the same day it happened. Their flood happened. Another tragic flood. I'm not trying to pit two communities against each other. But yeah, all to say, flood recovery, it's a marathon, not a sprint. It's still ongoing. And we're not even halfway to getting back to any kind of normalcy that these people can have. They're still afraid of when it rains. They're still afraid of when they hear a loud noise outside. Is it when they hear a tractor trailer drive by and maybe hit something, like a bump on the road? Their fear, a lot of them, their fear goes to, is that another tractor trailer hitting a house? Because those were the sounds of that night. I mean, it's really tragic. They're getting there slowly, but there's a long way to go. And so hopefully people still pay attention to this area as we continue that recovery.
Joseph Hudson, he does great work. Let folks know about the Wheeling Free Press. You've got some stuff working out. We're going to talk about some stuff to work out, because we want to keep covering West Virginia in certain ways, even though I do more national, international stuff. You do more local stuff. I think we can cover it from a couple different angles in the future. But let folks know where they can keep up with you until we get you back on the program, my friend.
Would love to. www.wheelingfreepress.com, where you can find my Substack newsletter. I will have a website soon. It'll look like an actual news site soon. You can find me on Facebook at Wheeling Free Press. And if you want some of my personal takes as well as my news, on Twitter, JusticeXH97, that's where you can find me.
Yep, we'll link to all that. Buddy, been too long. We'll do it again a lot sooner next time. Appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you very much, Andrew.
Yes, sir.
All the music on Her Tell is provided under a creative content license from MonsterCat.com. Folks, if you've listened to the Herd Tell program, you've heard our friend Gabriella Hoffman, but you need to make sure you're checking out her podcast, District of Conservation. It's a podcast exploring the nuances of true conservation efforts from D.C. and beyond. From topic discussions to exclusive interviews with conservation and energy newsmakers, Gabriella keeps listeners appraised of the latest news stories while elevating important voices. Listen to District of Conservation on Apple Podcasts or wherever podcasts are played. Folks, you've heard of Ethan Brown on the Herd Tell Show a couple of different times, but if you're interested in learning about how to discuss things like climate change without all the politics and doom and gloom, head over to his podcast, The Sweaty Penguin. Sweaty Penguin is a late-night comedy-style climate podcast working to add nuance, critical thinking, humor, and hope to the climate conversation. They got over 100 episodes already, breaking down weekly news stories and specific topics from the vanilla to the ADHD to the international accountability to orangutans. Yes, I know, it's a comedy thing, so just go with it. But each time, exploring different ways we can make progress on these issues while still helping the economy, health, security, and everything else we care about. Feel overwhelmed, exhausted, or excluded by today's climate change discourse? This is the podcast for you. Find The Sweaty Penguin wherever you get your podcasts or at www.thesweatypenguin.com.